Good morning, everyone. I'm going to call the meeting for the Civil Law and Data Practices Committee to order. And the first order of business is approval of the minutes for both January 5th and January 12th. There was an error made on the minutes of January 5th that has been corrected. Do I any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, Representative Lucero, would you like to move the minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
The minutes for January 5th and January 12th have been moved. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. We have a full house today. My understanding from the Sergeant at Arms is that we are at capacity. Room 181 has been set up for overflow. And I appreciate everybody coming out this morning. I also want to say a few words about what happened last night at the State of the State and how frightening that was for the entire state of Minnesota. And we just want folks to know that our thoughts and our prayers are with Governor Dayton and his family and his staff. And we pray Godspeed for him. And in light of that, folks, that was a serious moment for our state. And so I want everybody just to have we're going to have a really respectful discussion this morning. And so with that, we'll get going. Testimony is going to be limited to 2 minutes per person because we do have a full roster today. We do have 2 bills up, and so we're going to take we're going to debate this bill or hear this bill until 9:30, and then we will cut off discussion, take a vote, and move on to our final bill for the morning. So that's the plan. And with that, Representative Zerwas, would you like to move your bill? Oh, that's right. You're not on this committee anymore.
I'm not, Madam Chair.
You were last time. I will move House File 322, and the motion is that it be re-referred to be referred to the Public Safety and Security Policy and Finance Committee. So, Representative Zerwas, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 322 is a bill that's received a lot of attention in the last few days, and I think I'll start by talking about what the bill is not. The bill is not anything new in law. Would not be anything new in law that would limit someone's legal First Amendment rights. It would not limit anyone's ability to legally protest. It would not limit anybody's ability to legally petition their government or to demonstrate. What House File 322 is an ability to identify individuals that have broken the law, have been charged with a crime, have been convicted of a crime, and have caused great cost to taxpayers because of their illegal activity. By identifying those lawbreakers and those convicted individuals and allowing government agencies and government units of government to pursue, to recoup the cost of the enforcement action that they brought upon themselves by breaking the law. Now, in the last 18 months, the cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, Bloomington, other suburbs that have sent police officers as a part of mutual aid, the State Patrol, and other units of government, including the St. Paul Public School District, and the Bloomington Public Safety Department, and the Minneapolis Airport, have incurred in excess of $2.5 million in expense by responding to this illegal activity. The bulk of those governmental units fund their police departments and their public safety agencies through property taxpayers at the local level. And so we're talking about $2.5 million in just the last 18 months of property tax dollars that have been diverted from local roads, from providing community policing, from providing crisis intervention training, from providing other law enforcement training, money out of the classroom, Madam Chair, because of this illegal activity. I don't think that's right. And I think if you're convicted of a crime where you intentionally inflict as much expense and cost upon a community as possible, you ought to get a bill. It should not be a property taxpayer's responsibility to cover for your illegal behavior. Mm-hmm. This is not a new idea in state statute in Minnesota. In current law today, if you're in one of our great North Woods and you start a fire and you're convicted of that intentional fire or of that arson, the state of Minnesota has the ability to sue you civilly for the cost that you have incurred upon the state. The cost for the firefighters, the cost for the DNR, the cost for the plane that flies overhead to dump the water on the fire that you started or you broke the law. And so we get to this, where hundreds of people stream onto a freeway and lock arm in arm, or they take three or four cars and they pull perpendicular on 35W in the middle of the morning rush, and they get out of their cars and they sit in front of them. Hours goes by. Hundreds of law enforcement officers are called in from around the metro state, around the metro area. It starts the meter. It's just costs. It's just costs. These individuals have broken the law. It is against state statute to be on the freeway. They have broken the law. And now the meter's running. And taxpayers are holding the bag. That's not right. At some point, someone needs to defend the people that are given the bill. Well, that's what I'm here to do today. I want to point you to this weekend. Over 100,000 people came to our Capitol to demonstrate. Yeah. The organizers of the Women's March got a permit. The organizers of the pro-life rally got a permit. Everyone stayed off of the roads, except for the roads they had permission to be in. Nobody streamed onto the freeway. Nobody tried to block the light rail. Nobody blocked access to an airport. No one tried to shut down a private establishment. Instead, they decided to peacefully and within the bounds of the law exercise their First Amendment rights endowed by our Creator. And no protesters were arrested. No demonstrators were convicted. And this piece of legislation doesn't come into the mix at all. Ever. However, if you want to move your agenda, and you think the best way to do that is by linking arm to arm and marching down a freeway entrance ramp, well, then I think you ought to go to jail. And I think you ought to be convicted. And I think when you get out, you ought to be given the bill. Because I don't think that's right to stick that bill with the taxpayers. If you knowingly break the law in a way to intentionally inflict as much expense as possible, taxpayers shouldn't be left holding the bag. That's the gist of the bill. Madam Chair, I have no testifiers, and so we can go to testimony, I think.
So, members of the audience and members of the legislature on this committee, I'm going to be taking all testimony, and then we'll move to questions after the testimony. The first person I have on my list is Teresa Nelson with the ACLU. Good morning.
Good morning.
Please state your name for the record and continue on with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Teresa Nelson, and I'm legal director for the ACLU of Minnesota. We're a statewide, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization with over 22,000 supporters in the state. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk about House File 322 today because we do have some serious constitutional concerns, notwithstanding what Representative Zerwas has said. First of all, this bill is first and foremost aimed at people who are engaging in speech activities. And the First Amendment and the right to speech is at the cornerstone of our democracy. And we believe that House File 322 is likely unconstitutional because it will have a chilling effect on speech, and it allows the government to pick and choose who to punish based on their viewpoint, based on the content of their speech, based on the identity of the speaker, and that's very troubling. Free speech often involves protest, raised voices, anger in the area of grievances, and can sometimes devolve into an unlawful assembly or can result in charges for blocking sidewalks, blocking streets, blocking roads, especially when you have spontaneous speech in reaction to current news events. Now, this bill is styled as a bill that would simply help communities avoid unanticipated costs. But even the most well-intentioned law can run afoul of the First Amendment. And this law gives the government the absolute discretion on whether or not to bring an action to recover costs. So you may have two counter-demonstrations or a group of people demonstrating. The government can pick and choose whose message they favor, whose message they disfavor, and decide who to go after for costs. And that is tremendously troubling. The U.S. Supreme Court in Forsyth County, Georgia, v. Nationalist Movement, considered a similar ordinance. In that ordinance, the city was allowed to assess costs based on anticipated public safety costs. The court found that that was unconstitutionally viewpoint and content-based restriction on speech. I see my time is up already. I just respectfully urge you to oppose House File 322. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, folks, please refrain. We have a lot of testifiers to get through, and so please be respectful of the people that are coming forward to testify. They need their time, and I would prefer not to have clapping in between every testimony. This is an orderly place. Representative Lesh.
Thank you. So you said we're going to move to presentation, testifiers, and then questions. Are we just limiting testimony to folks on the list to testify, or
if there's time left, Representative Lesh, if there's time left before 9:30, we'll open it up to other testifiers as well.
Okay. Well, my question is, Madam Chair, that I have quite a few questions just based on what's been said already. I want to make sure there's meaningful time for the committee to ask questions.
All right. Why don't we take testimony until 9:15? That gives us 45 minutes, and that leaves 15 minutes for questioning.
15
minutes. All right. Madam Chair, I feel like we're going to need
people that signed up. I mean, there's people out here.
Representative Lesh, well, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just concerned that I'm not sure 15 minutes is going to be enough for the bill. Maybe it is, but if you could just kind of.
Well, we'll see how testimony goes, and, you know, if we're done at 9 o'clock, then that'll leave us.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ken Giesen, I hope I have that right. And then on deck would be Joelle Stangler. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead and state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, continue on. Members of the committee, my name is Ken Giesen. And I am alarmed to have to be here today to defend Minnesotans' constitutionally guaranteed right to peaceful assembly, which is now threatened by HF 322. Civil rights that each and every one of us here today enjoy were hard fought by our forebears, and nearly every one of them requires standing up nonviolently to powerful government agencies and being arrested. Let us be clear, the hurdles for such endeavors have always been high. Protesters know that they could face police brutality, pepper spray, and worse. This is why history-changing protests are only done when people feel they have no other option and decide that their rights and their cause are more important than their physical safety. And this is why we enjoy those very rights today. Is there anyone here today who honestly thinks that justice would have been better served if the police in Selma, Alabama, had charged poor African Americans thousands of dollars in civil penalties above and beyond their statutory fines? That Dr. King should have asked his followers to stand in a ditch so as not to inconvenience anyone or because they didn't have a permit? And yet here we are today contemplating a law that will excessively punish protesters for simply being present. In this climate of extreme partisanship, it's not difficult to imagine how a law like this can and almost certainly will be weaponized to suppress dissent and silence the people. Indeed, that seems to be the very intent of the law. Because clearly this is not a budget issue. I am more than happy to pay my fair share of response costs, whether or not I agree with the cause, as I believe are most Minnesotans. So, members of the committee, I humbly ask this of you. Please do not make us protest for our right to protest. Thank you for your time.
Please refrain from clapping. Next is Joel Stangler, and on deck, Joshua Schuneman. And after that, Rusty Shasselshort. I'm sure I botched that up. Is Joel here? Okay. Joshua. Okay. Rusty. Is Rusty in the audience? Okay.
Madam Chair.
Okay.
There's also individuals that may not have been able to get into the room, so as you're calling their names, they may show up in a few minutes.
Okay. Good morning. Are you Rusty?
I am.
All right. Please state your name for the record and continue on with your testimony.
Rusty Shackelford, activist at large. Thank you, members of the committee. Should each of you value the future of our democracy, founded upon the tenets of dissent to oppressive regimes, is ultimately your moral obligation to oppose this bill. This bill is incredibly broad, with no system for self-regulation in the case of its failure. On top of the structural problems of the language, the incentives it gives our local government to prioritize politically motivated responses to unlawful assembly rather than the safety of the public. This bill places undue financial burden on individuals who already face criminal penalties. It sets perverse incentives for police to use excessive resources and by proxy force, the cost of which can be mitigated by the civil penalties facing the convicted. This gives local authorities the power to make politically motivated reactions to unlawful assembly without any form of citizen oversight or administrative accountability check. Imagine if the Morton County Sheriff, the office charged with keeping safe the oil pipeline on the Standing Rock Sioux land, had a blank check to use as many resources as possible against the protesters. Would they be safer? And would the public be safer if the police had more water cannons, more rubber bullets, more dogs? I think the likely answer is no. Let us not forget that Minnesota taxpayers have lost limbs and been grievously injured at the hands of these bullish police forces. Are we to expect those very same citizens to be responsible for the cost of safety due to the violence of the state? This question remains unclear according to the bill. And that's problematic because it gives the state incentive to favor expediency at a cost rather than safety. It separates those who can afford civil disobedience from those who cannot. And for many, the God-given right to civil disobedience is the last privilege they possess in their opposition to injustice. We cannot impose another regressive tax on the right to nonviolent direct actions. Surely in this case, if we legalize civil penalties for unlawful assemblies and public nuisances for the sake of preventing protesters shutting down a highway, as Representative Zerwas has noted in his justification, you prioritize order at the expense of justified to dissent the principles of our government's character. I urge you, if you value free speech in our democracy, to oppose this bill. If you support the individual's right to self-determination, freedom from state repression, oppose this bill. If you prefer public safety over further incentivizing the state to use military-styled crowd control methods, oppose this bill. If you believe that the state should not have unlimited authority to tax lawful discourse, I implore you to vote no against this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shackelford. Again, if testifiers could keep it to their 2 minutes so we allow everybody to have their time, that would be appreciated. Ryan Voss is next, then Nick Borger is on deck. Ryan Voss. Nick Borger. Leanne Tomrinke. Is Leanne in the room? Are you Leanne? Okay. And on deck is Megan Walsh. And after her, Catherine Price. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
It's Leanne Pomrenke.
Ms. Pomrenke. Okay.
We were present at the Women's March. I did not bring my children because I have heard how protesters can be treated at certain protests, and I was concerned for their safety. I know that this protest did not result in any arrests, and I have read the testimony of women of color to the fact that it was largely because of the presence of white women that this was such a non-combative response by those who were keeping order. I am concerned not for my children, but for everybody else's children on the east side of St. Paul where we live and in our twin cities and in our state, that their parents and that their own safety at the protests that mean so much to the quality of their lives would be preserved, just as it is when a bunch of middle-class white women take to the streets. I cede my time to those whose voices should be amplified more than mine.
Thank you. I understand Ryan Voss is in the room now. Ryan? Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and continue on with your testimony.
My name is Ryan Voss.
Mr. Voss, just in case if you were out in the hall and you didn't hear, we do have a two-minute time limit for each testifier, and so my assistant here will hold up the time card when your time is up. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Minnesota protesters already pay for police response. We share the same tax burden as every other citizen in the state. And at the same time, bear the risk of that police response. So, in effect, this legislation would have protesters paying twice, which is a very unfair burden to place on people who are already risking their time and their freedom for what they believe in, as well as frequently taking time off of work or missing school, which is simply an unfair burden to place on a small segment of society, particularly one which may or may not even know at the time whether or not they are engaged in an illegal protest. I have been a member of a number of protest marches and rallies over the years, and the vast majority of them, since I wasn't an organizer, I was simply a participant, I still to this day could not tell you if they were wholly legal or not. And I know I was by no means alone in that fact. And I would also like to say that the irony does not escape me that this is being considered in a building that is located on Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Boulevard, who, let us remember, was arrested a great many times for protest actions, and whom we all thank for his actions to this day. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Voss. Next, Megan Walsh, and then Catherine Price. Is Megan Walsh here? Hello, welcome to the committee.
Hi, it's actually Megan Wolf. There was a, she called me back with a question about a spelling about me.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Go ahead with your testimony.
To make assembly infeasible by any means is the same as taking it that right away, and we will not be fooled into thinking otherwise. This bill is abominable. The right to peacefully assemble is enshrined in our Constitution, and more importantly, its fingerprints are on our nation's proudest accomplishments. This bill does not value peaceful assembly because rather than standing before us and clearly announcing its intent to erode one of America's founding principles, it obfuscates. It sneaks in, chisel in hand, to see what cracks it can make in the bedrock of our rights. It's not brave enough to put it on a sign, but we see it for what it is. So again, to make assembly infeasible by any means, financial or otherwise, is the same as taking that right away, and we will not be fooled into thinking otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Catherine Price. And on deck is Umayan Manhaza. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. My name is Catherine Price, and I'm here as an independent citizen. The wording of this bill and its intent is meant to punish citizens for coming together to raise their voice or discontent. This bill feels like a scare tactic. This proposed bill feels like the government trying to limit our freedom of assembly. Business as usual is not more important than citizens being free to assemble in whatever way they see strategic to their plight. HF 322 is a dangerous idea that would lead to the sort of similar bill that is being proposed in Indiana right now, and I do not support it.
Thank you. Humayun? I have no idea if I'm getting that right. The spelling we have for that is H-U-M-A-Y-U-N, the first name. All right. Brad Leto from the AFL-CIO. Good morning.
Right.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair, committee members, good morning. My name is Brad Leto, Legislative Director, Chief of Staff for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and I'm here today to testify in opposition to House File 322. I know what Representative Zerwas said, but it does seem to me that the goal of this legislation is an attempt to discourage the ability of people to come together and collectively express, promote, and pursue their ideas to seek positive change in civil organizing and human rights. Well, this legislation, we believe, is a step in the wrong direction. I doubt it will stop action to seek positive change where it is needed. If we do not remember history, we're bound to repeat it. And others have more eloquently said it, but you might remember that laws later ruled illegal were passed and were commonplace in southern states that sought to keep African Americans separate with black and white. Laws that made sitting in parts of a bus or at lunch counters or using the wrong drinking fountains are later ruled illegal. Civil disobedience met with attack dogs and water cannons. Who went to jail? Of course, the protesters, as that was the law. A just law, I think everyone now would agree these laws were not just. At least I hope so. So I believe we should tread carefully in the area of freedom of assembly. As House File 322 states, there are references already laws on the books But I would call that 60974, public nuisance. Is there? The statute begins by saying that a person is guilty of a misdemeanor of a public nuisance when they maintain or permit a condition which unreasonably annoys. Then it talks about engenders, endangers safety, health, morals, comfort, or repose of a considerable number of members of the public. The whole point that supporters of Mahatma Gandhi and Representative Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was to seek positive change by annoying and disrupting people from their comfort levels. When lobbying, letter writing, letters to the editor, picketing, and marches do not work, union, civil, and human rights and racial justice leaders have shown time and time again that further action may be needed to get positive change. House File 322 seeks to make positive change even more difficult and ensure status quo. We encourage you to vote this bill down. Thank you.
Thank you. Eric Norquist. Eric Norquist is next. And then on deck is Kathy Natek. I'm guessing the G is silent. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
I'm Eric Norquist. On its face, HF 322 is presented as a sort of cost-saving measure. Local governments can recoup costs incurred by policing so-called illegal protests. But these hypothetical lawsuits will hardly ever result in any money. If protesters had the $2.5 million on hand that it would require to cover police costs, then they would not have to take to the streets just to have their voices heard. If they had that kind of money lying around, they could influence legislation in any number of ways that did not involve the risk of being beaten or arrested by police. No, any lawsuit brought forth in the wake of HF 322 would not recoup money for local governments and would instead result in more expenditures of money and effort. If recouping the tax money is not realistic, then what exactly does HF 322 accomplish? It does two things. First, it scares people from protesting and thereby voicing their opinions, even from legal protests, because there are any number of pretenses under which police might declare a legal and authorized protest illegal. Second, it punishes those who express a dissenting opinion too loudly and too boldly. Of these two effects, the bill will have, the second, lawsuit as punishment, is unnecessary as there are already punishments for illegal protests. There are arrests, fines, and any charges brought at the discretion of prosecutors. It is over-legislating and unnecessary. The first effect, scaring people from protesting, is utterly morally repellent. As public protest has traditionally been one of the only ways for the politically voiceless to be heard. Need only to look to history to see that it's so. HF 322, should it become a law, will not result in the recovery of any significant amount of money by any local government. It will only be used to frighten and punish those who are already politically disadvantaged and oppressed. This is a use of the legislative system that makes a horrible mockery of good governance and which frays the very fabric of our democracy. Is that the end, or that's almost the end? All right.
Thank you so much. Kathy Natek, and on deck, Adam Iverson. Good morning. Please state your name for the record and go on with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Kathy Gnatic. I'm a lawyer and a former law clerk to Honorable Donald D. Alsop, Chief Judge of the Federal District Circuit Court, or Federal District Court here in St. Paul. I clerked, you know, just a little bit away about 29 years ago. I came here today as a matter of conscience. I'm very disturbed. While the authors of this bill say, or the author says his aim is to inhibit unlawful assembly, good Minnesotan common sense, the kind of common sense my judge and all the other Republican judges I worked with had, dictates that the most likely result of this bill will to be inhibit protected political expression. As such, it does nothing to help the cities and does much to harm Minnesotans. There is no question that the law the authors are proposing could lead to draconian punishment. Imagine someone is involved in a large protest which is later found to be unlawful assembly. Under your statute, potentially any one participant could be sued by the city to recover the entire cost of the public safety response instituted in preparation for the assembly. In some instances, that could be thousands of dollars, as well as attorney's fees, and could bankrupt an individual. Such a convenient weapon could also lead to potential arbitrary action by government, as the ACLU representative and other people have stated. It would give power to potentially target leaders of groups to dissuade future political action. Moreover, there is no clear line delineating the difference between legal protest and illegal assembly. This fact, combined with the potential for draconian punishment, are almost certainly likely to inhibit the expression of political speech, and this is unconstitutional, as we all know. It is very difficult for the average Minnesotan to tell in advance what will be defined by the authorities as unlawful assembly or nuisance behavior under the statute. I live blocks from the governor's mansion, and my husband and I walked there every day this summer during the protest, and I could not tell myself, as a lawyer with many years of experience, what was protected and what was not. The result of this statute, if it's passed, would be that someone like me, as well as people that are much less privileged than I, would be kept from exercising our right to be present, to protest, to do what the founders of the Constitution asked of us, what they said. The power of the Constitution, the power to run this government, comes from the people, from people like me, from every people just like that are here today speaking. And you cannot and should not and must not pass this statute. Thank you.
Thank you. Adam Iverson, and on deck, Lainey Oman. Good morning. Please state your name for the record and go on with your testimony.
My name is Adam Iverson. I'm here to implore you to not further this bill. This is an abomination. There are so many ways to address this. For those of you who are concerned about the monetary issue, consider perhaps the years of legal battles that the state of Minnesota will fight should you choose to pass this law. It will certainly ultimately be ruled unconstitutional, and in the process, you will have embarrassed us. I would like to address the notion of the militarization of our police force and the effect that a law such as this could have on the militarization of our police force. We are a peaceful people, and I have seen so many variants of responses to our demonstrations. I have been at the Mall of America, where I saw riot gear and I saw shields. I have been at the Women's March, where I saw none of that. I have been in between, and I have seen what might happen should our police have that blank check, should they have that promise of justification for whatever forceful action they may choose to impose on a specific instance. I would ask you to consider whether or not you want to sign your name to this. Do you actually want to be a part of this? Do you feel that history will be kind to you? I don't think so. Please vote no.
Lainey Oman, and on deck, Abdirazak Mohammed. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning. My name is Lainey Omans. This is my first time testifying before a committee, but I feel very strongly about this issue, so thank you for your patience. I want to say that I was present at the Mall of America protest in 2014, and I found two things to be really striking about that protest. One, how incredibly well organized and peaceful it was. I attended with members of my church family, and we chanted and sang Christmas carols. It was really moving. The second thing I found to be striking was the level of police present and how aggressive they presented. As the gentleman before said, they were wearing riot gear. It seemed excessive. I'm not an expert. So I remember reading afterwards that the city of Bloomington was attempting to seek $30,000 in restitution for police overtime. And I thought, well, was that necessary? It seemed like a peaceful protest. Very few people were arrested. I think that this is one of my specific fears for this bill, that municipalities and governmental units, is that the language you used? Okay, yeah. So would be allowed to seek restitution far in excess of what's really necessary. a number of people have mentioned the Women's March didn't have that kind of police presence. I think that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about in fear. If possible, I'd like to give my remaining time to other people.
Thank you. Abduzak Mohammed? May Esperanza Los Loso? Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is May Esperanza Los Loso, and I'm a citizen of the city of St. Paul. I'm really glad that a lot of folks have shown up in our communities to this hearing this morning. I speak as a participant in many public assemblies and protests. I have literally feared for my life and the lives of my community, my family members, and that is why I protest. This is why I exercise my opinions, and I respect other opinions as well. You know, I don't think that we should be policed in expressing our First Amendment rights. And I believe that this law is, or this bill is too broad. I mean, how will it actually be enforced? Will police be given, you know, like people have said, a blank check? We've seen the discrepancies between who is targeted, who is processed by the law, and who is not. And I wish that you would look to that, the discrepancies in who actually gets prosecuted and who doesn't. I think that is an important lens to look at, because our communities, we feel under attack every day. You know, there's not one day that my partner doesn't drive through, you know, Falcon Heights that I don't literally fear for his life. So our lives are on the line, and we cannot stand for this any longer. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience wishing to testify this morning? Sir, come to the testifier's table. Please state your name for the record.
My name is John Thompson. I am an employee of St. Paul Public Schools. I also work with, I work very closely with Philando Castillo. He's one of my good friends. I lost Philando on the 6th of July. On the 4th of July, I spoke to Philando. The last words out of Philando's mouth to me was, John, I love everybody. All right, so we're talking about somebody who served 200 kids a day. Love each and every one of them. So then we fast forward to his untimely murder in Falcon Heights. Let's be clear, Philando was murdered. We were not protesting. We were mourning Philando's death at the mansion. We were mourning being racially profiled. We were mourning being oppressed. And I don't know if you know this, but being oppressed is embarrassing as a black man. Being oppressed is very embarrassing. It's humiliating. We were mourning police brutality. And what do you send to break it up? The same people we're trying to protest against, you sent the police. The same people who beat us upside the head with sticks, the same people who mace us. That's what we were mourning. We have no voice, so what we do is we vote for people like you to make changes. We vote for people like you to give us hope. We vote for people like you to stand up against garbage laws like this that's trying to be put into. This is a shame. This is a shame. My friend was murdered by the police. He was murdered. And I want to be clear. He was murdered. I was not protesting. I've been a machinist for St. Paul Public Schools for 9 years. I wasn't protesting. I was mourning my friend being shot 7 times while I witnessed that live on TV. I was not on 94. I didn't agree with them on 94, but I understood. And all we asked for, you know what they were doing? They were asking for all you guys to come out and say, what is it that we can do to help you? Not one of you came out. Not one of you came out. What is it that we can do to help you? And to this day, we're still asking you to come out and help us. I know my time's up, but to this day, we're still asking the police department to come out and help us bridge this gap. We're asking government to come out and help us bridge this gap. We're asking the mayor to come out and help us. Please help us. Don't harm us. We are not criminals. Black people are beautiful people. My friend was murdered. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Hunter Cantrell, Madam Chair.
Go ahead with your testimony, please.
So first of all, I want to address there's a logical fallacy that's called a false equivalency that we witness here today. A man who starts an arson is not the same as protesters who are absolutely trying to make a statement that they do not have a viable route for recourse in our society. It is abhorrent. The ACLU released a study in 2015 that had about 2 years worth of data from Minneapolis arrests. It showed that of 96,000 arrests, black people were 9 times more likely to be arrested for low-level crimes. That is, both on misdemeanor crimes that would fall under 609715, that are punishable by a fine of $3,000 or a year in prison. Let's be frank about this bill. This bill is a reaction to increasing amounts of black-predominant protests in Minneapolis. That is absolutely what this bill is about. It's about criminalizing people who do not have a voice in our society. It is asinine. I say it is asinine that when we consider for people who are arrested in an unlawful demonstration, who's going to be the people who are most likely going to have to foot the bill? White people who are arrested with a median income in this state, we have horrible racial disparity in this state, where the median income for white families is about $80,000 and a median income for black families is about $30,000. It is the worst it has been since 1970. Actually, it's worse than it was in the 70s. So the white folks who get arrested at these protests are going to end up being able to afford a nice fancy lawyer and they're going to get off. But guess what? The black people who are going to be the majority of the arrestees in these protests, as we have empirical evidence to indicate such, are going to have to foot the bill. They're going to have to foot the bill. And how do you apportion, how do you split up $2.5 million among people? That doesn't make sense. You're going to bring people, it just doesn't. You're going to bring people to court, let's say maybe the bill's $15,000. You're going to bring people, you arrest maybe 150 people, bring people to court for $100. And then what happens when all the white folks who got arrested get off? Well, then the black people who can't afford the same type of equity and representation are going to be forced to foot the bill for that? That doesn't make sense. So here, how about I propose this ludicrous proposition that instead of trying to further criminalize black protests, we actually address the systemic racial issues that are prevalent in our society. Thank you.
We'll take three more testifiers. Representative Lesh. Please state your name for the record. Please keep your comments to 2 minutes because we only have time for two more testifiers.
My name is Laura Necht. That's K-N-E-C-H-T. And thank you for the opportunity today. I am proud of the testimonies that have been given before me. I come from a very privileged circumstance, and I'm not going to take very much of your time. But in addition to all the points that have been raised today, I think that this bill is a great example of the fact that we live in a society that has not only become polarized in terms of opinion, but has become threatened by dissent of any kind. And I think that is not only apparent here, but also within the rhetoric that has come to dominate the federal sphere as well. And I don't think that it's something that should continue at all. Dissent and voicing of opinion should not be something that should be, when it's peaceful, criminalized in any way, shape, or form. And at the same time, we should feel confident in communicating with each other and seeing each other as human beings, whether we're in the street, whether we're sitting in a committee chair, or whether we are talking to each other in the workplace. I have come from a situation that, again, like I said, is extremely privileged compared to the majority of people, and I wish that wasn't the case. But even from my perspective, I have been anxious and I have felt like I am not safe in terms of going out and protesting. And I say that almost, you know, my problems are slim compared to so many, even just in this room, in terms of what it is that I have to go against to have my voice heard. And when I don't feel like I can even come to this assembly without worrying about whether or not I would be arrested for what it is that I have to do, you know, whether or not I would have to have a permit to be able to, you know, stand on the steps of a public building and say whether or not, you know, I agree with one thing or another. It's frightening, and especially for those people who have just a fraction of what it is that I have. This bill, this proposition, is a scary step forward if it were to pass, and so I implore you to please say no. Thank you.
Thank you. Next. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Kathy Jones, and I'm the vice president of the Minneapolis NAACP. And I come today with a message from the Minneapolis NAACP and our president, Jason Soule. The Minneapolis NAACP unequivocally condemns and opposes HF 322 because it would infringe on constitutionally protected rights to free speech and assembly. The burdens of these restrictions would be disproportionately borne by people least able to pay large settlements. HF 322 would give police departments a blank check to overreact to public protests. It would also provide an incentive to categorize peaceful demonstrations as unlawful assemblies and to charge as many people and collect as much money as possible in Minnesota. We don't sue sports fans for extra policing costs associated with events. We don't charge bar patrons an extra fee at closing time for increased police presence. Protecting the right to protest is part of the role of law enforcement, not something for which citizens are expected to pay extra. This bill, along with other companion legislation increasing protest criminal penalties, is the shameful Republican response to the Black Lives Matter movement in Minnesota. Our state is facing racial disparities that are among the worst in the nation in areas including income, education, health care, and policing. Rather than address these injustices, Republican politicians are seeking to stifle the protests that bring critically needed attention. We must stand up for free speech and the right to protest in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Our final testifier, is there someone... Pam, are you coming forward? Good morning. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning. My name is Patience Zalanga. The fact that this bill has been proposed is not only angering but expected. It was only a matter of time. Representatives, I'm not here to ask you to vote against this bill, although I encourage you to. I'm simply here to let you know that my people are coming for our freedom. With or without your vote. No vote, no bill can diminish the people's hunger for freedom and humanity. And if you think so, you are gravely mistaken. We've been here, we've done this, and we'll do it again until our voices are heard.
We'll now take questions from the committee. Representative Hillstrom, you're first on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Zerwas, this question is to you. I don't support your bill. I'm going to be a no. And I've got a long list of questions that I would like to be asking you, but given the time constraint, I'll start with this one. You're proposing that the fees that local communities have incurred based on these peaceful protests should be reimbursable. Do you have any support or any resolutions from any of the communities or any public support, letters of public support from Minneapolis or St. Paul or the State Patrol or the sheriffs or any of the folks who have put out this money saying they need to have your bill so that they have the ability to recoup their costs?
Representative Ross.
Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom, first to correct you, if you refer to line 1.7, a person is only liable for public safety response cost if the person is convicted. So, I know there's a lot of talk about peaceful protests, but this applies only to individuals convicted of a crime. And the individuals I've been speaking to are property taxpayers.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Zerwas, I've been a prosecutor for 6 years. And if you were interested in simply seeking restitution for local communities when someone committed a crime, we would not simply be talking about freedom of speech here. We would be talking about all kinds of crime. And Representative Zerwas, that is not what we have here. We have something specifically related to the ability for people to protest or to exercise their rights. Members, in 1939... my grandfather participated as a Teamster in the strike at the University of Minnesota. The federal government determined that it was illegal to strike against their government. In 1939, my grandfather participated as a union steward in the right to protest the fact that they cut women's, mostly women's, wages, and they increased their hours. Here in Minnesota, at the University of Minnesota, Hennepin and Ramsey County rounded up 130 protesters, and they held them at the Hennepin and Ramsey County Sheriff's Office. They set bail so high that they could not afford it. Unions across this country organized to pay their bail, and they negotiated that five people would go to federal prison and that charges would be dismissed against many of the other protesters. My grandfather spent 18 months in federal prison because he chose to stand up for the right to organize. That law was later declared unconstitutional. But members, we have come a long, long way in Minnesota, giving people the right to stand up for their rights. And it has been a long time that the government has attempted to stop that, both at the federal level and at the state level. Minnesota, we've had a long history here. Going back 1934, the Teamsters struck. We had a bloody battle over the right to organize for truckers. In 1939, it was a federal strike here in Minnesota. We should not go back. We should not go back to stopping people from organizing.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have three questions for Representative Zerwas. Hopefully they'll be quick. Representative Zerwas, I have a question on why you think this bill is needed. So I was prosecutor for 15 years, and when someone was convicted of a crime, which it has in the first sentence of your bill, one of the provisions under Minnesota sentencing law, 609.10 for a felony, 609.125 for a misdemeanor, expressly allows for restitution to be recovered from the person convicted. And it says restitution includes payment of compensation to a government entity that incurs loss as a direct result of crime. Now, that's all crimes. What your bill is saying that as opposed to just recovering the restitution as a condition of probation, now the government has to go out and sue these people, hire lawyers to go out and sue these people. So they've already got them on the hook for restitution as part of probation. Why do you want to hire lawyers to go sue them again for the same money? Don't get me wrong, I'm a lawyer. I want to get paid to go to court. But why is it needed?
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair. Representative Lesh, this bill was designed for due process. And so this will allow an individual, if they are sought to repay for the costs of the law enforcement expenses that they brought upon themselves while breaking the law, that there is due process built in.
Representative Lesh.
Okay, well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Zerwas, I don't think that answers my question. I think this is a solution looking for a problem.
I think there's a problem. I think there's $2.5 million in 18 months that says there's a problem, Representative Lesh. We have a go-to move of blocking airports so people can't leave town on Thanksgiving weekend. We have a go-to move of shutting down freeways and stopping ambulances and emergency personnel from getting into Minneapolis. We have a go-to move of blocking light rail transit and crippling the blue and the green line. So I think there is a need for this. I think there absolutely is a need for this. And if you think the civil remedy is the wrong approach, then I encourage you to sign on to House Bill 390, a bill I'm also carrying that makes this a gross misdemeanor to block a freeway, to block access to an airport, or to block the light rail line. If you think the criminal option is better, then join me and fight for that.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that, Representative Zerwas. I think I'll have plenty to say about your other bill, too, the criminal bill, when we're tagging it. But let me just say this. On the $2.5 million cost as assessed by law enforcement, My question is this, is that how do you designate that? So give you an example. On Saturday night, I was driving back from southern Minnesota. I was on drill when the Saturday night protests happened this summer on I-94. And it was Sunday night when I was finally getting back from drill. And I was driving up Lexington, and there right off of St. Anthony and Lexington off 94 were about between 6 to 10 cops in their squad cars hanging out. And I knew some of them, having been a prosecutor for a long time, and I stopped and talked to them. I said, so why are you guys here? And I said, well, you know, just kind of plussing up because of the protests last night. And I looked around. I was like, have you seen anything? They said, no, nothing since, you know, 11 o'clock last night. And so my question is this. The restitution, $2.5 million, does it include those folks? I mean, are you asking people, are you trying to sue people for the costs of cops hanging out for a couple days later? What's the limit on this?
Representative Ross.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks for the question. It's I think the way it's written in the bill is to recover actual costs involved in their arrest. And so it would not be for several days later. The figure, $2.5 million, is numbers compiled by the Star Tribune and Pioneer Press and the Associated Press through data practice requests of the Minneapolis Police Department, the Bloomington Police Department, the State Patrol, and other agencies.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative
Lesh. Thank you, Representative Zerwas. But the data practice request is the newspaper is just asking law enforcement agencies, how much did this cost you? There's an incentive for them to fluff the numbers on that. So for any agency, law enforcement or anyone else, you say, hey, how much this costs you because we got to pay you. Oh, yeah, let me check my numbers. Right? Okay, it's going to be inflated. And we see that on the floor all the time.
Well, what do you...
Representative Zerwas.
I guess, Representative Lesh, I do a data practice request from the State Patrol, from Commissioner Dillman. Send me a data practice request, or send me the data. Commissioner Dillman, the Public Safety Commissioner, are appointed by Governor Dayton. I assume that she gave me accurate information. I don't think she's politically motivated to inflate those numbers. The numbers that were reported by the Star Tribune and the Pioneer Press and gathered by the Associated Press were numbers of overtime hours, man hours and women hours accrued and tallied out for those departments over that period of time. If you think as a part of the data practice request process that the Minneapolis Police Department or the St. Paul Police Department or the State Patrol submitted inaccurate documents as a part of that data practice request, you should take that up with them because they broke the law. That's you saying that you think they broke the law. I don't think they violated the law. I think when they complied with the data practice request, they turned over accurate documents.
Representative Lesh.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lesh. Well, if I did break the law, maybe I could get restitution from my time then.
Maybe.
But let me say this. Madam Chair and Representative Lesh, every agency from the beginning of civilization is financially incentivized to fluff their numbers. It's not about breaking the law. You ask them how much it costs you, they're going to have a higher number. But let me ask this, Madam Chair, Representative Zerwas, does this bill impose individual or joint and several liability upon the protesters who are convicted?
Representative Zerwas.
Yeah, Madam Chair, in the language of the bill, there's discretion as to how the reimbursement is pursued.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, what that means then is that it's potentially joint and several. So I've got here a picture of everyone who was at that protest on Sunday, okay, the Women's March. And you can see they're stretching on the Capitol Mall, and just the same thing on the mall here in St. Paul. They stretched all the way back to the cathedral. And I'm trying to figure out where would you draw the line of how much police costs are required. Do you draw the line there at 12th Street? Do you draw it back at the cathedral? Because Representative Zerwas, unlike you said, there was someone who was arrested at that march. His name was Paul David Pearson. Okay, he was a counter-protester. He was the only person who was arrested. So is he responsible for the protection costs of 100,000 people?
what? We were all very respectful while you gave your testimony. And I would just ask the same in return. Representative Zerwas.
No. And if you read the bill, it says related, the cost related to their arrest. And so the costs related to the arrest are not the costs involved in 100,000 and protecting 100,000 people. The interesting thing, Representative Lesh, is that demonstration followed the law. It had the proper permits. They stayed in the area that they said they were going to demonstrate in. They never blocked any roads. If individuals from that protest would have spilled onto I-94, and there would have been 100 police officers that would have to go to deal with that, then you have a different situation, a different setting, unique to those individual lawbreakers. But that's the big confusion here. And that's what you've done on social media, and that's what people have done for the last several days, is you've confused the issue. This bill doesn't impact someone legally expressing their right to free speech at all. If you violate the law, if you block traffic, if you block access to a building, if you go out of your way to bring in extra law enforcement costs, and you bring up that cost because you just want to make it hurt, that's what this bill is for.
Madam Chair, I don't have any other questions, but just a final comment. Representative Zerwas, I can guarantee you that the folks that protested outside this building on Sunday did not have permits for 100,000 people going blocks from the Capitol. They did not. They did not have those permits. Therefore, that protest was technically outside the limits and the boundaries of the law, as you stated, and they would be liable for those costs. And that, I think, is a fundamental flaw in this bill. No more questions, Madam Chair.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Zerwas. I'm very troubled by your bill, as I'm sure you can imagine. I'm also troubled by what I'm going to talk about next, and I'm conflicted because this country was founded by white Europeans coming here and taking over the land of the people that had already been here. And the reason that I preface that is if our forefounding fathers of the United States of America would have been under this law, we may not even be a country. I mean, this country was founded on protests. Protests against the country of England for oppression that was happening to people that had migrated to our country. So our country was founded by giving discomfort to those who were comfortable. And that's what these protesters have been doing. I want to ask you a question, two questions, and I'll get to the second one, which I think might be a little bit troubling for you. How much money has the state recovered from forest fires that were intentionally set?
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, I represent Dean. I do not know.
Okay. Do you know how much... thank you, Madam Chair. Do you know how much money was actually charged to arsons that may have set forest fires in the state?
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, Representative Dean, I'd have to look back, but I can think of one or two that was in the neighborhood of about $100,000.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Zerwas. And if you don't know if that money was recovered, your bill is pretty much just out there for good fodder for a lot of people in the state to be angry at people that have been protesting. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, and I want you to bear with me a little bit. Did your mom or dad ever have the talk with you when you were 8 or 9?
Representative Zerwas.
Representative Dean, I learned a lot from my parents.
Okay, well,
Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Zerwas. There are two young black men that were shot in Minneapolis and St. Paul in this last year. And almost every parent that has a black child, black male children especially, have a talk with their children when they're like 6, 7, or 8. And they talk to them about how to act when they encounter a police officer. And they have that talk because they want to see their child coming home at night. So I think that as we think about this in the context of our city and our state, we need to recognize that life isn't the same for all of us. Some of us have some privilege that, quite frankly, we were born with. We didn't do anything to earn it other than being born to the right parents. And I think what your bill does is it begins to attack people for exercising their right to try to make some of us that are really comfortable a little bit uncomfortable so that we can see the change that needs to happen. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Ross, any comments, or should we move on to the next question?
Next question.
All right. Representative Omar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Soros, I'm new here, and you and I have not had a lot of time together. But as you might have read, I am an immigrant. And I come from and was raised in a country that was under dictatorship. To me, your bill and the limitations that it's trying to create, it seems like you want us to live under dictatorship. When I came here, my grandfather talked a lot about what is great about this country. And I know those of you here in this committee and in this body who were raised in the privilege of being protected in a constitution that is designed for most of you having earned new privileges as a citizen in this country. I hold dear a lot of the words that are in the Constitution because they allow me to be seen a little bit more equally here. So I just, in case some of you don't read it as often as I do, I want to read you what the First Amendment says. The First Amendment, religion and expression, which is my favorite because freedom of religion is important to me. Congress should make no law respecting the establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the rights of people peacefully to assemble, to petition the government for redress of grievance. I know that this bill has you authoring it, but it also has co-authors of almost all, I think, the Republicans that are on this committee. And I know that to Republicans, the Constitution is really important. It's revoked a lot when it comes to protecting our rights. And I'm wondering if you believe the Constitution is important.
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, Representative Omar, yes.
Representative Omar.
Do you believe in the Second Amendment?
Representative Zerwas.
Representative Omar, yes.
Representative Omar.
Do you believe the right to bear arms in the Second Amendment?
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, Representative Omar, yes, I do.
Okay. Representative Omar.
So there is a lot of conversation in this country where people are trying to create limitations within the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, because some people believe that when we have young children that are killed in the schools because we have a madman with a gun, we need to have certain regulations for it. Do you believe certain regulations should be created for that?
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, Representative Omar, yeah.
Okay. Representative Omar.
In your bill here, and in the testimony that you gave, you talked a lot about spilling into the roads. What I'm trying to figure out in reading the bill, and again, I'm new here, so I might not be very fluent in reading these bills. I would like to know where the clarification is and where the language is that specifies spilling into the roads and what is considered unlawfulness and how we are, as citizens, supposed to know where the boundaries exist within this law that you have right now.
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, Representative Omar, on line 1.8 and 1.9, it talks about participating in an unlawful assembly under 609.705 and being present at an unlawful assembly under 609.715 or committing a public nuisance under section 609.74.
Mm-hmm. Representative
Madam
Omar.
Chair. So in Saturday's protest with 100,000 people present, there was one person who was arrested, and I presume the charge is probably for lawful assembly and nuisance, public nuisance. And so my question...
Is there a loss?
Madam Chair, I think I read that the individual was charged with felony-level assault.
Representative Omar.
So in this charge that is going to lead to a conviction in your bill, would that conviction that he might receive get him to be responsible for the police presence of this protest?
Representative Ross.
Madam Chair, Representative Omar, I believe the news report was that he was charged with a felony-level assault. That would not be covered under this bill.
Representative Omar.
Madam Chair. So in 2014, there was a protest that happened in Mall of America. And in that protest, there was some... protesters, some demonstrators that were arrested. And in the arrests that were made, many of those charges were dismissed. When you have a protest that has 1,000 people, 2,000 people, 3,000 people, and you have few individuals that are arrested out of those people, how are we to decide, or under this bill, how is the discretion made? Who gets to be responsible?
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, on 1.14 through 1.16, it talks about following up on that action, and that it may bring an action to recover civil liability and related legal, administrative, and court costs. And so the language is permissive, and the entity would have discretion as to how they pursue that.
Representative Omar, any further questions? Okay. Our time is up for this bill, so if you could hurry those along, that'd be great. Thank you.
Just a few more. Thank you. We're having a lot of conversations of the cost that is accrued by taxpayers, as we refer to them as property taxpayers. For this incident, as many have expressed in their testimonies, we as citizens already pay for the police to protect and serve, and we will now also have to decide if we maybe take an insurance in case we protest and get arrested so that we can figure out a way to pay for that, possibly. Or maybe set up some savings for the days that we protest and get arrested.
What I am wondering is that in Minneapolis, in the city that I reside in and represent, there is a lot of money that is paid out because the police use excessive force. And so for that, who do you think should be responsible for?
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think that's a good question for your city council. I think that's a good question for your mayor. I don't know how that's handled in your city.
Representative Omar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question isn't specifically for city council. It is to you as someone who is worried about where our taxpayer money should be spent on. I'm wondering if you think our taxpayer money should be spent on for us in providing for more jobs, for fixing roads. Do you not also believe that our money should not be paying to pay for excessive force?
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, Representative Omar, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should pay for excessive force. My hope is that as we move forward, the mayor, the police chief, and the police department have those incidents as infrequent as humanly possible. Anytime there's excessive force, it's a stain on the community.
Representative Omar.
So for that particular one, you would like the municipalities to take care of it?
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, I believe, and I'm not positive, but I know in my city, when I was on the city council, the city of Elk River was insured through the League of Cities Minnesota Insurance Trust, where they pay in dues, and then their insurance policy pays that. I'm pretty sure Minneapolis participates in that as well. So I believe it would be a league insurance policy that would cover most of those.
Representative Omar.
The city of Minneapolis turns out it's self-insured. So what I'm hoping, since you seem to be someone who's very concerned about property taxes, for us to hopefully maybe offer a bill together where we can make sure that the police are responsible for the money that they accrue when they use excessive force. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Folks, we are out of time.
A quick comment. I promise I'll be brief.
Okay. Representative Coe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Zerwas, your comment earlier, I don't think anybody here is confused in terms of the content of your bill. Honestly, this bill is designed to intimidate legal protest, period. Some politicians are afraid of democracy in the streets. The Constitution, including the First Amendment, is a higher law than traffic regulations. As elected officials, we swear an oath to protect freedom under the Constitution. These engaged citizens here today are demanding that our government work for us and not against us. I oppose your bill.
Representative Zerwas, any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for your time.
Roll call.
Roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Just a reminder that the motion is that House File 322 be recommended to be re-referred to Public Safety and Security Policy. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Scott.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Lesh.
No.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Dean.
No.
Representative Hillstrom.
No.
Representative Howe.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Lunan.
Aye.
Representative Lucero.
Yes.
Representative Omar.
No.
Representative O'Neill.
Aye.
Representative Pugh.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative Whalen.
Aye.
The vote is 9-6. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Lunan, your bill is up next. House File 251.
That's our work.
Representative Lunan?
Madam Chair?
They don't get no peace!
Madam Chair, can I move my bill?
Yes. Representative Lunan, would you like to move House File 251?
Yes, I would like to move House File 51, which I believe is getting has to be referred to Public Safety.
That is correct. Public Safety and Security Policy and Finance, which is a mouthful. Representative Lunan, to your bill.
House File in Minnesota is what y'all telling us. Y'all might go forward on that.
Representative Lunan,
thank you.
To your bill.
We're coming for y'all seats. You won't be in that comfortable seat long with all the eyes. We're coming for your seats. And that's next.
Can I proceed?
Shame on y'all. It's a crime to be black in Minnesota. Shame on y'all.
Madam, my bill. You want to
pass? Who are you representing?
Please, if you're planning to leave, please do it peacefully so we can get on with our business.
If they're going to come to your